You know, there's a stigmatism when it comes to how the common soldier, I believe, views the safety personnel. They think we're like out to get them or trying to catch them in some sort of mistake they've made. That's not what we're trying to do. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to advise mainly. I'm trying to let them know if they're doing something wrong, there's a better way to do it.
I'm Joe C. Mandel, and this is Raven Conversation. And today I'm joined by Staff Sergeant Tom Foose. You are the safety specialist, safety officer, NCO for the Washington Army National Guard.
I'm the safety program manager for the Washington National Guard.
That is a much better title, so I'm glad we said that one.
Yeah.
You do that both M Day and full time. Used to be in a crew chief with the UH-60 Blackhawks.
Yes, the medevac unit.
And also joined by second time joining us, Sergeant Mike Cummings. You are also in the safety office full time.
Correct. I am the state safety specialist.
And you are still a crew chief with the Blackhawks.
Correct.
On the M Day side.
Yep.
So they're here to talk about the safety office, what they do, how they actually support the entire organization, not just on the full time side, but also M Day side. So for those M Day safety officers and safety NCOs, listen up. This might be some good information for you, and really just what they can do to help the organization. So appreciate you guys joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, so Mike, we'll kind of skip your intro and background. You've kind of given us that before,
but
Tom, we'll kick it over to you.
So first of all, I'm not a native Washingtonian. I like to consider myself one now because I've been here since 2005. What brought me here to Washington was the regular Army. I was in the regular Army for about 10 years before I was in the Guard. I was actually a Kiowa Warrior mechanic. I was a 15 Juliet. This was armament, electrical, avionics on the old OH-58 Delta Kiowa Warrior. I got stationed here in 2005. I joined a couple years before that. And I was on active duty until around 2011, decided to call it quits and do something else. I ended up going straight into Boeing, and I was an instructor there teaching people how to work on aircraft for a number of years. After about 2-3 years of doing that, I kind of missed that military flight line, and I missed the camaraderie that I had in the military. Boeing's a great place to work for, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed working on commercial aircraft and teaching people how to work on commercial aircraft. But I just didn't get that same feeling that I had as when I was in the Army and the military. A lot of my fellow instructors were ex-military, so that was kind of nice. But the vast majority of my students, like new hires and people who worked at Boeing, were not ex-military. Just a lot of civilians and people that maybe grew up in the company and stuff there. And it's just a little bit of a different mindset, you know? So I decided to look into the Guard. And I wanted to do something a little different. I still wanted to be in aviation. But I actually had a student who had a relative that was in the Washington Guard, and he told me that they had stood up a medevac unit in the Guard. I'd heard rumors about it because I still had friends that were stationed here and stuff like that, that were in what is now 16th Cab. And I remember on deployments when I was in the regular Army, seeing the medevac out there, especially like my second deployment in 07, 08. And we supported a medevac detachment because we were what was called an AVIM unit, Aviation Intermediate Maintenance. And I would hear their little bell go off, whatever you want to call it. And I'd see them run out to their pad, you know, and then they blast out of there, you know, going on a nine line. And then I'd see them out there doing hoist training and stuff like that. And I just had that feeling like, man, they have a real mission. I felt like, you know, I understand what I was doing was important to keep Kiowas flying, but I just see that and like, that looks exciting. And, you know, I'll bet they get a good feeling at the end of the day after they go do a nine line or something, you know? So I was like, maybe I could do that in the Guard. I heard there was a unit that had stood up. So I attempted, I went to a recruiter, and I was living up north at the time. And I went to a recruiter up in Everett, and he was a brand new recruiter. I was going to be his first person he signed up in the Guard, and he was not aviation. He didn't know anything about it. He was just like, well, let me look it up. There's no slots. Sorry. That was literally what he told me. He's like, I can get you in as a blah, blah. And I went, no, that's not what I want to do. So I'm somebody that when I get a no, I don't think of it as just no. I think of it as a not right now.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, what can I do? So one day I was teaching over at the Frederickson location in Boeing, and nobody showed up for my class. So the rule was, if nobody showed up, I actually got to leave and still get paid. It was nice. Anyways, I took that opportunity to come over here. So I knew where the guard hangar was at, because when I was on active duty, I'd gone over there a couple of times to borrow tools or get parts, yeah, things like that. So anyway, so I went over there, and I still had, I could get on base. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go over there, introduce myself, and be polite and ask questions. So I literally walked into the hangar. Everybody thought I was a Chinook rep because I had my Boeing stuff on. It was funny. But I ended up meeting some really good people, and they steered me in the right direction. And short story long, I did an interview on the spot with both of the flight instructors at the time. And they said, yeah, we think you're the kind of person that we would like. So if you want to do this, here's a number. I want you to call this specific recruiter, and I want you to give him this number I'm going to give you. And that got me in the guard.
Give you like a paragraph line number just to say,
much,
put me in this slot.
Yeah, that was it. So I called this specific recruiter that was in Seattle, not Everett, and went and talked to him, told him that so-and-so sent me there. And yeah, we worked on it. And I think it was like 7-8 months later. I had a little issue because I had eye surgery when I was on active duty, and the MEPS people didn't like it. I ended up having to go to the Portland MEPS because the Seattle doctor was really finicky.
Wouldn't have been the first time. Won't be the last.
Yeah. And that is funny. That's what the recruiter told me at the same time, too.
So I always like to ask this question. How'd you learn about the guard? I think we all have an interesting guard story. So.
Well, the first thing is, to be honest with you, the Army Guard was not my first choice. I had heard there was an Air Force rescue squadron at Portland, and I thought, ooh, I was like, I want to do that. I want to be in a rescue squadron, and I want to be what they call a special missions aviator.
Okay.
Which is basically kind of like what we do now, but they don't really do a whole lot of maintenance. They mostly just crew.
Yeah.
So for crew chief, that's like a dream. If we could just fly, that would be amazing, right? Not have to worry about working on the aircraft. Anyways, I started to go on that path, but then it turned out that the unit there is a little different than a lot of other rescue squadrons. The aircraft are not permanently assigned there.
They get moved a lot.
Exactly. The PJs are assigned to Portland, but the aircraft actually are TDY out of Davis-Monthan.
Okay.
So the recruiter told me, this was an Air Force Reserve recruiter, he said, I can still sign you up, but you're going to have to go down to Davis-Monthan in Arizona for drills and such. No. And yeah, I was like, no, I don't think that's going to work for me.
Because I'm trying to remember, is that the Tucson side?
Yes,
yeah.
It is. Yep. Yeah, yeah, I've been to, that's where the Boneyard is.
I've been there a number of times too, the Boneyard.
If you love aviation, you got to make a pilgrimage to the Boneyard, military aviation.
No, Pima County, Arizona.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, amazing museum, and take the tour. They'll drive you around the Boneyard. It's very cool.
So I'm an intel officer by trade, and you know that was my branch, and so we'd have to go to Fort Huachuca, and so Tucson was always the big city, right? And so
you'd
make the hour and a half drive to Tucson on the weekends.
I was actually TDY in Yuma, Arizona, doing testing with the Kiowas and UAVs, and I took the van one day by myself, and I drove from Yuma all the way to Davis-Monthan to go see the Boneyard. Yeah. Anyways, so that didn't work out. I'd heard about the medevac unit, so like I said, I just showed up one day. And I've learned that if you are polite and genuinely interested in something, that will really take you far in life, at least my experience.
That is true. That is very true.
So that's how I view things, and it worked out, and I ended up going into the medevac unit.
Yeah. So I don't know, and Mike, I don't think we talked Rainier Dust off the last time you were here, really, in your unit. So describe what it is the unit does. I mean, I know you're not in it at the moment, but you have more than enough information probably. So what is Rainier Dust off? What do you guys actually do in the medevac unit?
I'll let Mike talk a little bit, you know.
Rainier Dust off is what we've come to call ourselves. It was actually stood up as a deployment unit in 2011, I think, is when they got their orders. Big Army needed a medevac unit from the Guard to go to Iraq and
Afghanistan.
And The unit was established early 2012, I think, and it was comprised of course, senior flight medics. Mm-hmm. They found a command team for it, and it was born to go on a deployment. That was its first iteration. Shortly after that deployment, they came back, and as many units do after a deployment, some of the soldiers are like, okay, that's enough. I'm going to move on and do other things. Mm-hmm. So they had to reconstitute the unit, and that was about the time that Staff Sergeant Foos and I had come in the guard kind of simultaneously there. Mm-hmm. And as the unit was rebuilt, we boarded and got on the roster that way. And it's been rolling as a regular guard unit since then. We've deployed to Kosovo. We trained for domestic missions here in the state. We participated in the Cascadia Rising a few years ago. We currently train with King County, Snohomish County helicopter teams doing rescues and hoist operations. Most recently, Seattle Fire Department has participated in full training, so their rescue techs are now qualified on the Black Hawk helicopter for hoist operations.
Yeah, you guys have been pretty busy this summer. I think Mount St. Helens, I'm staring at a photo yeah. over here, Mount St. Helens, in the corner yeah. of my eye. Seattle Fire, I know we went and captured you guys up there. Mm-hmm. So it's a fantastic mission, and I'm glad we're kind of building it into the domestic response, because when a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake happens, mm-hmm. medevac helicopters are going to become critical, imagine. So mm-hmm. it'll yeah. be let's get people to out of danger into an actual area where they can get medical attention. Yeah. So we could probably talk Rainier Dust Off for hours, but we're here to talk safety yeah. mm-hmm. and the safety office. So what is the Wash Army National Guard safety office?
So firstly, the safety office, the separate safety office, is actually more of a tech side entity. Mm-hmm. So because I'm going to answer your question kind of in two parts. Yeah. So the tech side, basically, what we do is we monitor the tech workforce and also AGRs too, because they're here full time as well, or people are on orders, such and such. But it's our job to basically help mitigate risk, help prevent mishaps, things like that, whether it be personal mishaps mm-hmm. or equipment related mishaps. We try to help eliminate occupational illnesses. So like our full-time technicians that work on things, such as people who work at CSMS or people that work at flight facility number one, right? We're trying to make sure that those mechanics, you know, they may be working with hazardous chemicals, or they may be working with radiation or lasers or something like that.
Yeah.
We just try to help make sure that they're doing that job the safest way possible, and that our facilities are adhering to Army regulations, Department of Defense instructions, and OSHA regulations. A lot of people don't realize, yes, we're in the Army, but we actually have to follow OSHA regulations. Yep. Believe it or not, OSHA regulations actually trump Army regulations in most circumstances. Now, if it's a war fighting specific thing,
yeah.
that's different. But our day-to-day that we do here in the Washington Military Department, generally OSHA supersedes it.
Yeah.
It really does. The Army is continuously evolving its safety programs. And actually, in the past couple of years, it's gone from just a black and white paper document and regulation to a big program that is Army-wide, that is big Army, Reserve, you know, National Guard. We have the Army Safety and Occupational Health Management System now. The CRC, the Combat Readiness Center, their website and their role has evolved quite a bit over the past couple of years. The Army in general has really invested a lot more in safety, I would say, mm-hmm. in this past decade. I mean, and I've noticed a difference from the time I was on active duty in the regular Army in the early 2000s till now. I feel like there's a lot more safety involvement than there was before.
Is that kind of an industry standard? Like, okay, yes, the Army, we in a deployed zone, it's probably a little bit more willing to take risks because, it,
yeah.
you know,
operationally,
yeah. it's stuff is happening all the time. But when you're back in kind of like a garrison type situation like we're talking about,
yeah.
Is that, okay, here's the industry standard when it comes to mechanic safety, when it comes to facility safety, and now we have to meet or exceed that because of that kind of standard that has been set?
I would agree that that's a mentality and that's a culture in the military in general. You know, you deploy down, I mean, I've deployed twice to the Middle East and then Kosovo a couple years ago with the medevac, and the culture is it always loosens up when you get overseas because the main focus is we got to make mission. The big thing that I like to say with safety is finding that balance of conducting operations and being safe at the same time. It's definitely a balance, and it's a uphill battle all the time. And part of that is just due to the nature of what we do in the military. And then also it's a culture battle too, because you have this mentality of I'll be fine, whatever, or we've always done it that way. Yeah. You know, that's the famous saying, especially in aviation. That's one of the most dangerous sayings or expressions.
We've always done it this way.
Yeah. Until I hate to say it, but a lot of times safety doesn't get improved until somebody gets hurt.
Yes.
Either somebody gets hurt or a lot of dollars worth of damage happens to military equipment. That is usually the driving force.
Yeah.
Now we're trying to get over that culture hump in the Army. And that's why I was saying that I believe that safety has really evolved just in the past 20 years alone. And of course, a big part of that, I would say too, is GWAT.
Yes.
I mean, GWAT, Global War on Terrorism. for those of you that may be younger Guard folks that are like, GWAT, what's that?
Oh, it's GWAT.
It's GWAT. I tell you what, it was an interesting time. Yes. It was a wild time.
Got the campaign ribbons. And
yep.
I'll look back at
exactly,
it.
Yeah. Anyways, what I'm trying to say is that GWAT had a huge impact on it because the way that the Army functioned changed dramatically. You know, a big part of that too was you can go all the way back to, well, the end of the Cold War, and we, you know, we went from big divisions to mobile brigades, and when GWAT happened, we went to fighting insurgency instead of fighting, you know, we're going to fight the Russians at the Fulda Gap, you know, and massive amounts of tanks. No, that's not what was happening.
Yeah.
You know, we were fighting, you know, small groups, you know, and IEDs and things like that. Our operations changed and the way we did business changed. And as a result of that, safety also had to change too.
Yep.
So I think I kind of went off a little bit on a segue there. Sorry about that.
No, all good.
But to come back to what does the safety office do or who we are, our main mission, like I said, is to help reduce mishaps. You know, when it comes to people, when it comes to equipment, things like that. Now, I did say that I started out with the tech side, right? So we're trying to watch out for people working at our FMSs, people working at flight facilities, people who work in office settings like this full time, you know, even people at like HRO. You know, we're concerned about how's their building. Is it up to code? Does it have all the fire prevention things that it needs to have? You know, is there black mold and stuff like that? And that kind of is a just quick little segue into, in addition to the safety office, we also have an industrial hygienist. Mm-hmm. We also have an occupational health nurse, which is kind of safety related as well. We used to actually all be under one umbrella. And then a couple of years ago, they decided to split us up. And they put industrial hygiene and occupational health underneath MedCom. But we still work together most of the time. And those subjects kind of cross into each other. That's on the tech side, like the full-time side. On the MDAE side, myself, my position is different. I'm the state safety non-commissioned officer in charge. We also have a state safety officer in charge, a CW3 Nunn. He's a former Chinook pilot who doesn't fly anymore. Now he's doing safety. He's learning safety. It's kind of interesting. I've been kind of actually having to train my boss a little bit, kind of like the whole platoon sergeant, platoon leader dynamic a little
and
bit.
And he's just a traditional guardsman. He's not a
He is just a traditional guardsman, M-Day. Yeah, we're hoping to get him to either what's called ASOC or GSOC, Aviation Safety Officer course, or Ground Safety Officer course, which are very similar. One just adds a few aviation-specific topics at the end. We're trying to get into that as soon as possible. Of course, with what's going on at the moment, it's a little uncertain, but hopefully we'll get him into that so that way he can be a fully qualified safety officer. Because to be a safety officer, also on, we're talking about the M-Day side, you have to go to one of those two courses. Actually, I should back up, excuse me, because we have safety officers at every level. To be a safety officer at the, for example, like the brigade or division side, that's what I should say, or post level, or state level, I'll say. To do that, you need to go to ground safety officer course, or you need to go to aviation safety officer course, because that really dives into OSHA. Yeah. It dives into how do Army regulations work in relation to day-to-day operations. Yeah. And it gets into that higher level management. So people that go to those courses are expected to have that kind of top tier knowledge and expected to manage the safety officers at the lower levels, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
the way I'm
explaining it. Very similar, like I think to us, right, is that there's an expectation at the state level and then kind of trickle down from there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's us kind of helping and supporting their organizations below.
Yeah,
And that kind of leads to my next question is, how do you guys support the organizations, not just at the state level, but even like the MSC and battalions and company levels?
Yeah, one of the things I was going to say on the M-Day side for safety, one of the things that I'm more focused on is things like exercises. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, Raven Focus. I'm in JFHQ. I was actually assigned in the very beginning. I was actually assigned to be the safety officer for the whole exercise. Mm-hmm. Then we had a little bit of help kind of come in. So I ended up being the safety NCOIC for the exercise. But funny enough, I was the only qualified safety person at the time. So if anything happened, I was the only one that could
really do anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there were a number of mishaps that happened. But I was very pleasantly surprised on what the level of the mishaps were. Yeah. A lot of them were simple things that kind of just happen with any kind of exercise of that nature. Yeah. You know, lots of things like spills, trips, falls, things like that, you know. We actually had very few vehicle mishaps, which warmed my heart compared to previous ATs where we all got together. And I had even noticed that compared to previous ATs and other exercises that I've been the safety officer for, that our culture is changing just a little bit at a time for the good, for the positive side. And that warmed my heart. Things like seeing soldiers that have their license, have their dispatch, have a whole driver's packet basically with them, showing that, hey, yes, I'm qualified to drive this vehicle. No, somebody didn't just print this license out for me the month before and we took a spin around
that morning.
Yeah, and took a spin around the motor pool and said, congratulations, you're now licensed. You know, I go around and I ask these soldiers, not because I'm trying to get them in trouble. That's not my intent. That's not my goal. My goal is to see what their experience level is. I want to see what the commands of these units, how are they taking, like, for example, driver safety seriously? Or, I'm sorry, seriously is not a, that's not a good way to put it. What kind of commitment they're putting into that, you know? Because I understand they have lots of things they got to cram into their drill weekends. But if they could cram a little bit of driver's training in there, that would be really great and would help reduce that risk, you know, which is what all commanders need to do, right?
Truly. And you were out and about in Yakima. We saw you out there in a safety. Your vehicle had big signs that said safety. And so seeing like that you were out there the whole time and you were out in the field, it wasn't just back in the, you know,
in the MTEF.
Do you think that helps where it's like, hey, you can go right down to the ground level and be like, look, here is a violation and let's just adjust these things so that we can make it safer?
Exactly. You know, there's a stigmatism when it comes to how the common soldier, I believe, views the safety personnel. They think we're like out to get them or trying to catch them in some sort of mistake they've made. That's not what we're trying to do. what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to advise mainly. I'm trying to let them know if they're doing something wrong, there's a better way to do it. Yeah. Or maybe regulations, there's a proper way to do it. And maybe they didn't know that. Maybe they didn't get that training. And that's another thing that's another tell for me is, okay, maybe I need to talk to that chain of command and be like, hey, Sergeant Major, hey, sir, could you maybe spend a little more time looking into this? What I discovered talking to some of your soldiers is a lot of them are saying the same thing. Like, I received a very minimal amount of training because there wasn't enough time, or we had to make mission. You know, that's the big one, is everybody wants to make the mission, of course. You know, that's why we're here, is to execute operations. Yeah. And that's where, like I said earlier, that balance comes in.
Yeah.
Executing operations and being safe at the same time. It's going to be an uphill battle pretty much forever until we figure out a new way to conduct business. Right. Which is probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Right. And you always kind of hear the old adage, you know, Joe's going to Joe out there and
sure.
do something.
Yeah.
And break an arm, break a leg,
yeah.
fall off a vehicle. But it's culture, like we talked mm-hmm. about, but it's also just, you know, I think there's a, hey, we need to educate people on this stuff
yeah.
and let them know, like, this isn't the way we do it. At least yeah. now it is not it now.
So. Yeah, exactly. You know, and the big thing is, what I hope they take away is, oh, that safety guy caught me doing. No, that's not what I want. Is I didn't even know that, perhaps situational. Perhaps I didn't even know that we could do it that way. Mm-hmm. Or I didn't know that regulation existed. Or I've never seen that TM for that piece of equipment before. I didn't know it talked about that.
Yeah.
My job, what I want to do is I want to educate. I want to advise. I want to educate and basically just help.
Yeah.
I know that's an oversimplified description, but that's what I want to do. You know, when it makes me feel good when I see a soldier was doing something maybe potentially dangerous or they didn't know what to do, if I could at least steer them in the right direction, that makes me feel real good, you know, when I walk away.
Yeah.
I've had a few, and, you know, one of the things I like to do, so you may see me out there, is on IDTs when I'm not busy doing other things, I kind of just like to pop in and visit units. Now, my goal is not to be a hindrance to their operations yeah. or anything like that, or to be annoyance. I just want to observe and see how they're doing things.
Yeah.
One time I popped in on 146 while they were getting ready to go out and do some practice, their workups to AT. And I found out through my channels that they were doing some stuff at, where was I? I think I was at Utes. And I just kind of walked around, you know, just watching, ask a question or two, you know. And I actually learned some. I learned, on that day, I learned how to PMCS a JLTV, and I learned how the system to PMCS a Striker works.
Yeah.
How their computer system and stuff. So that was really, for me, I really liked that.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, I know how to do that. Now I can watch other soldiers do it and see how they are doing it. Are they going off of memory? Are they using that TM that's located on that computer system in that Striker vehicle? You know, yeah. are they using that computer system in the JLTV to look at all their current, you know, what's going on with the vehicle at the time? You know, are they just like, tires are good. Okay. Yeah. I remember last IDT, the vehicle was good. Yeah. So it must be good
check,
now.
Check the box.
Yeah. You know,
things sit for a month. It totally is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're kind of like us in a way, right? PAOs, we go out to training all the time. We're not there to be a hindrance or a nuisance or mm-hmm. even be a pest to the folks out there. We're there to amplify, here's what you're doing, and we want to showcase that because there may be somebody out there who's like, hey, that looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure they know that we're yeah. just there to assist in making that happen. So yeah. very similar. You're just making sure when those soldiers are doing the job, they're doing it safely where they're not being hurt, which would then
exactly.
take them out of being in the guard,
yeah.
essentially.
Reduce operational readiness. Yeah. Plug.
Well, there you go. So, and Mike, I imagine being you're still M-Day on the aviation side, you bring mm-hmm. a lot of what you learned full time into your role over there.
Yeah, yeah. Besides the extensive training that I get as a safety professional, we go to the resident GSOC course. We do the online Army training. It kind of brings more of an awareness than I had before.
Mm-hmm.
We do discuss safety extensively in aviation because it is a very dangerous mm-hmm. endeavor. But it did give me a broader perspective on how the Army treats safety and how important it is and what impact any incident, small or large, would have on training and readiness going forward. It gives me a broader appreciation of how important those things are. One thing I wanted to discuss was Staff Sergeant Foose kind of gave us a down in the trenches, how we do it day to day. One of the big things that the safety office does, we're data collectors. We do reports up to the NGB level, and that data gets fed into the entire force, for not just the Guard, but the Army as well. So that data can be analyzed, and they can look at the mishap reports and collect all these different points of data and give us solutions going forward that'll help reduce risk in any future training plans, things like that. It'll impact doctrine if we're participating in functions that may not be the best way. All of this data collection gives our upper echelons enough information, enough knowledge, that it will affect change down to the company level. And hopefully our efforts with these reports and inspections going up the chain that far will actually have a safer response and give us what I like to say, bullets or ammo for our efforts going forward to make our force safer. And I think that gives us a little bit of pride in our position that we're actually having that much of an impact.
Yeah. So you brought up a couple things and I wrote them down here. So I'm just thinking from an MDAY standpoint, unit safety officers, NCOs, you guys probably provide some level of training for them, especially really probably just the state level mostly, correct?
Well, I was going to say for unit safety officers, which can be officers or NCOs, you don't have to be a warrant officer or commissioned officer to be the safety officer in your unit. You just have to be trained. So a corporal can be a safety officer in a unit technically, or a sergeant major, or a W3, or a major. It all depends on who can do it. Their first stop is online training with pretty much like everything, right? Is they take those basic courses that they have to take, which is called Unit Safety Officer Course. And then they also have to take Risk Management Online, or Risk Management Basic. That's the very first stop right there. After that, there's actually more safety that they can take depending on what kind of unit they're in. There are other safety courses. But what I have tried to do for our safety officers, especially for somebody new, that basically they got told, hey, Sergeant Joe, or hey, sir or ma'am, you're now going to be the safety officer for Charlie Company, blah, blah, blah. Yep. Right. What I tried to do for them is I created an online SharePoint page that is just a huge resource for them. I actually even created parts that said, you are a new safety officer. What do I do now? Right. So it gives you links to all the Army safety websites. I constantly upload Army safety documents and DODIs and OSHA regulations in there. So basically they have a library. That's where I go to track all the safety officers in the state, because part of my job is to track their education level to find out, hey, are there people actually assigned in this battalion or company, MSC, whatever? Have they actually taken the courses that they need to take? I've put all kinds of different references, documents. I upload the Army National Guard safety newsletter that they put out on a monthly basis up in there. There's also a risk management newsletter that comes out on almost a weekly basis. I upload all those as well. I've tried to make it a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
So if this person finds out, this soldier, excuse me, finds out, hey, I'm a safety officer now, what does that mean? Is it just a piece of paper that says I'm assigned as this? No, it's actually a job. All right. I mean, technically, if a mishap happens in the unit, it's supposed to be actually that company level safety officer that does the investigation. Yeah. Now, the flip side of that coin is to do accident investigation, you have to go to that course, or you have to go to GSOC, which includes that course.
Yeah.
Now, honestly, are most safety officers at the company level going to get to go to those courses?
No, probably not.
So I would like to see perhaps the MSC levels, you know, with people that have longevity, because there's a lot of turnover too. Mm-hmm. And I expected that to happen. Yeah. At all those different levels. I'm hoping at the MSC level, we can get a little more longevity and get those people into perhaps GSOC or at least the accident investigation course. So what that results in, it results in my office ended up doing pretty much 99% of all the investigations. So, that's okay. It's just the Army, actually NGB, says you're supposed to be doing it at your unit level.
Yeah.
But that's also where I can help too. For especially like if somebody is brand new, it's kind of daunting to do your first accident investigation. I mean, I've been doing them for about 3 years now. And when I mentioned that the Army was evolving with safety, my predecessor, he did not have any of that training for that. So basically, I kind of got thrown into the fire and I got back from school and a couple of mishaps happened a couple of months later and I just went in and did them.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it sometimes.
To be honest, it was. And I'm not saying he didn't help me or anything like that. I'm just saying he wasn't familiar with the new system. So I had to learn what's called ASMIS, the Army Safety Management Information System. All our acronyms.
That is a lot. Wow.
Yeah, in safety, we have some really long acronyms, actually. I had to pretty much learn how to use that system by myself. Especially because my GSOC class ASMIS wasn't working. So we talked about it, but we didn't actually get to play with it really in my particular class. I think Sergeant Cummings, when he went last year, that it was a little better, I think.
Yeah, we did review it and we did create an account and we did process a report, but it was really kind of,
quick.
Is what it is. This is how you do it.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So this leads me to my next question that you kind of mentioned it too. So every unit, right? Any kind of training thing, risk assessments. That's been pounded into us since we were lieutenants and junior NCOs to do a risk assessment. Do you guys help in any way with risk mitigation, assessments,
we can.
Risk management?
We can definitely help with that. One thing I want to say is if you don't know about it, please use JRAT, Joint Risk Assessment Tool. It's a very great tool to help you write your risk assessments. There's a lot of risk assessments that are already pre-built into the program. So all you have to do is literally just put the little details in.
The where, when,
who. Exactly, or you can start out from scratch.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a good way to learn how to use JRAT to start out from scratch. Yeah. But if you've got operations that you do over and over on a regular basis, which is kind of what we do in the military, right? You've already got that stuff in there. Yeah. And once you upload one in, it's there.
Yeah.
So then you can just modify it next time with the where, the when,
literally,
or maybe a different unit, et cetera, et cetera.
It's like you go to the range every year, just type in a different date, same
range,
unit.
Range is in there. Range PT in test there. Is in there. Going on a ruck march is in there.
Yeah.
Classroom instruction is in there.
Yes. Yeah.
Convoy There's operations
stuff
is in
that's
there.
In there too.
Yeah.
So should be pretty easy for anyone to just go in there. When you think about it, right, it was a daunting task as a young officer. You're like, man, I got to write a risk assessment. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what do I put in this?
Yeah.
And so now that there are tools and an office to help kind of lead you in that path, it sets you up for much greater success in the end.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, if anybody is trying to do something safety related in their unit and they don't know what they're doing, please call us. That's what we're here for. We're here to help, whether it's the tech side or the M-Day side.
No,
that's
good to know.
We're here to help. We're here to advise.
Yeah. And feel free to share your contact info and let them know, because that's a big piece to this. Anything else you want to kind of throw in there?
I'm very easy to find in the global. There's not very many FUSAs in the Guard. Not a whole lot in the Army either. Sergeant Cummings is very easy to find as well. All of our contact info is on there. I have all the stuff in my signature block and all that. I need to make cards. That's what I need to do. I need to talk to the media folks, right?
Get the little QR code cards like we have, and it's like they just scan
that
it
would actually,
right to the site. And
that would be great
really well.
If you could maybe help me figure out how to do that. I would really appreciate it. Yeah. And that way I can give them out to units like maybe like next year's AT or next time we have a Raven Focus or other big event. That's one of the things I was thinking about when we had Raven Focus this year was like, I wish there was an easier way to get my contact info out. Something I could just go like that,
We'll make that happen. And anything else you want to add as we're kind of closing?
can't think of too much right now.
I have a couple things.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So one of the big things in the military is, in the Army, is, you know, we're losing soldiers to vehicle accidents. Mm-hmm. And that is something that's preventable. 90%+ of them are off duty and things like that. Our office will pay for your motorcycle safety course.
Yeah.
It's free to soldiers, no cost to them. It's difficult to get on post to do it because as guard members, you have to go on orders. There's a whole lot of paperwork behind it. That's funding that the guard may not have.
Yeah.
But if a soldier finds a safety course at their local community college, at their local motorcycle dealer, and it costs $285 or $300, that's a big chunk of change out of somebody's pocket. Hey, get in touch with us.
Yeah.
We will pay for that. There's a form that goes through your immediate command. It's just a signature. This soldier's taking the safety course. Get it back to us. Staff Sergeant Foos will make sure the funding is covered for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing we ask is when you graduate that course, just give us a copy of your little certificate they give you. That's the only receipt we need for that. Also, for the military members in Washington that have prescription glasses that work in a shop somewhere, we provide prescription safety glasses at no cost to the member.
Yeah, and I appreciate bringing up the motorcycle safety.
Yeah, I'm glad that Mike brought it up.
We push it out every week too.
So I rode my motorcycle today.
Yeah.
That's a great plug for that. And then the safety glasses too. I've heard that one too, where it's like, hey, did you know if you have a prescription, you can actually get safety glasses. So those are all things that hopefully the folks in the shop are utilizing. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, and for those folks that want to do the motorcycle safety training, it's just an SF-182.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes.
And we can definitely put all that information in the notes. Anything else kind of wrapping up, and we'll make sure all your contact info is in the notes. We'll make sure we get a link to anything safety in the notes. So
that'd be great.
And I appreciate you guys coming on and sharing that stuff with us. If you like the video, give it a like. If you have any questions, throw it in the chat, please. And we'll definitely pass it along to you guys. We do get a lot of questions on these kind of things.
Definitely.
We'll put all the information in the notes and subscribe for future videos. Tom, we appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having us.